The Tom Woods Show, episode 842.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, there are a few things in this world you cannot compromise on, and one of them is a good night's sleep. Take $50 off the affordable, comfortable, awesome Casper mattress when you visit casper.com/woods and use promo code WOODS. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Bob Murphy's with me. We're going to be talking about a topic Bob recommended, and it involves this. In the age of Trump so far, we're getting a lot of left liberals who are suddenly concerned about the powers of government, and they're outraged about this or that, but they weren't outraged about something equally bad done by Obama or some other predecessor. And what a lot of libertarians have been doing is saying, what is the matter with you hypocrites? Why does this alarm you, but that didn't? Or why all of a sudden, conveniently, do you have this principle when before you had that one? And we've been scolded by some libertarians, you know, hey, it's more important now if there's a fire, it's more important to get together to put out the fire, blah, 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 blah. So is it wrong, or is there some benefit to pointing out that there may be some hypocrites at work here? Should we forget about that and just link arms with our new friends? So Bob Murphy, as you know, he's my co-host on Contra Krugman, the weekly podcast we do refuting Paul Krugman's New York Times column. Bob holds his PhD in economics from New York University. He's the author of many books, most recently Choice, Cooperation, Enterprise, and Human Action, and The Primal Prescription, Surviving the Sick Care Sinkhole. Follow him at consultingbyrpm.com. Bob, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Nice to have you and not be on Contra Krugman, because there are issues sometimes that arise that are not connected with Krugman, and we got to talk about him, and this is one of them.
And isn't it refreshing to just not even have to mention the guy?
Not even have to mention
the guy. Except for what you just did?
Except for what I just did. That's right. Now, maybe we could do an awkward segue in this episode, too. We'll see. I don't know how that'll work. Yeah, you know where you won't have to deal with violent leftists. But anyway, the point of this episode, as I just laid out for people, is trying to figure out what's the right approach to take in this situation? And I know you've been thinking about it a lot. You've been writing about it a lot. I sent out an email to my list the other day that crystallized some of my thoughts, because Brendan O'Neill in The Spectator in the UK expressed them so beautifully. It was like I wrote them, not because they're so beautiful, but because they're so much like my thoughts. So I'm going to share that with you in a minute. But you, I know, have kind of vacillated on this, not knowing exactly what the right position is, and you've really thought about it. So what have you decided is the right approach to take broadly? And then we'll look at some particulars.
Well, if you don't mind, Tom, I'd like to keep your listeners in suspense. Let me not give them my conclusion, but let me just sort of build up to it. So all along during the campaign, I was saying, hey, guys, I don't like Donald Trump. I think he's a jerk personally. And I think a lot of his policies would be really bad. And sometimes I'd even put it in caps in my blog so that nobody could miss me saying that. And I'd say, I will say, however, that these attacks against him are really over the top, and it's starting to make me sympathize with the guy. And so what really flipped it for me was when National Review ran their whole issue dedicated to taking him out. And I thought, well, these guys, I know it's not that they're up late at night worrying about civil liberties and restraining military aggression abroad, so why are they against him? So that's when I actually flipped and stopped treating his candidacy as a joke, you know, just kind of like as a funny thing because he was entertaining, and thought, oh my gosh, this is interesting. So there was that element. And then I thought he was going to lose the election. And when he won, I could not believe it. And I was overjoyed. So I'm just putting my cards on the table so people know where I'm coming from, because I thought he was so much better than Hillary Clinton would have been. Not because I, would have endorsed every policy he says, obviously, especially about trade. And then in the aftermath of that, on social media, I was guilty of this, if it is something I should be guilty of I could not believe the hypocrisy of how many progressives were coming out and excoriating Trump for doing stuff that was 1% of stuff that Obama did. My favorite example is the New York Times running a front page article on how President Obama had a secret kill list, and nobody cared about that. And yet we're supposed to be flipping out because Trump gives tax breaks to Carrier. So that was where I was coming from. And I was just tweet. And then I noticed that I was getting a lot of people following me on Twitter who had like Make America Great Again hats on in their profile picture and stuff. And I had even some more recently, some longtime friends kind of privately ask me, so Bob, did you change? I kind of thought you were like a, you know, an anarcho-capitalist libertarian. Are you like, did you get really conservative? Are you a big Trump guy now? And so I was like, huh. And I realized it is true that that's what I had been doing in my social media is more. I like Peter Klein's phrase. He said he's not pro-Trump. He's anti-anti-Trump. And I thought that crystallized what I was doing. But what made me really stop and pause, Radley Balco had a post. I don't have it in front of me, but it was very well written. And I knew exactly what he meant. And he said, hey, guys, I'm paraphrasing here. But he said, hey, everybody. Yes, the progressives are a bunch of hypocrites, or a lot of them are very hypocritical. But, you know, right now, when Trump is in the White House doing things that you yourselves agree are violations of civil liberty or, you know, wrong on foreign policy, maybe you should stop making fun of the snowflakes who need a safe space and start addressing your, you know, criticism and targeting your fire against the person who actually has a lot of power in this country. You know, something along those lines. And I thought, ooh, gee, that really stung me. Like, I thought, oh, man, am I doing that? So and I thought about it and I've refined my strategy or how I think I'm going to approach this going forward. So I don't agree necessarily with what Balco was saying wholeheartedly, but it really did make me stop and pause for a few days, really thinking this stuff through. So what are your thoughts, Tom?
Well, let me refer to this email that I sent out. I guess by the time this airs, I will probably also have posted it as a blog post. So I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/842. But this is what's bothering me. This is why, and people will say, well, look, yes, it's true that Obama did bad things and these people weren't particularly alert to it, but now's not the time to be dwelling on that. And there's some kind of a ring that has the ring of Krugman saying, well, who cares what caused the financial crisis? We're in it. Let's try and fix it.
Tom, can you stop talking about that guy for once?
You know where you will probably be. All right, anyway, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, on Twitter, for example, there's a woman who, you know, she's upset about the immigration thing. And somebody pointed out to her, well, were you this upset when Obama did the same thing to people migrating from Iraq, for 6 months? And her actual response was, no, I loved President Obama. What on God's green earth does that have to do with anything, right? So my view is, I don't think these people actually suddenly understand the merits of limited government, or that if I just talk to them nicely, they're going to get that. Now, if it were my uncle and he was having some insight all of a sudden, I would sit him down and say, well, look, now you kind of understand why I've been having this view. Because maybe one-on-one, my uncle's a regular guy. He's not part of some, you know, left-wing violent group or whatever. I might be able to reach him. But I don't think these people do get it. And I think it is necessary to point out the inconsistencies here, because why would I want to spend time collaborating with people who are just going to turn around and stab me in the back 5 minutes later, who I want to see if they have principles or not? There's nothing wrong with that. So, for instance, this email that will, I hope, be a blog post, Brendan O'Neill was writing in The Spectator. Now, Brendan O'Neill, as anybody knows, is not a Trump supporter. But his point is, I don't get why people are so willing to let others whitewash themselves by comparing themselves to Trump. So, for example, Madeleine Albright. This is the woman who famously said, well, look, she was told 500,000 children seem to have perished because of the Iraqi sanctions. And we have all seen the 60 Minutes clip where she says, well, we believe the price has been worth it. We've all seen that. Bill Richardson also doubled down on that as well. And now Madeleine Albright is saying, I may register as a Muslim to protest what Donald Trump is doing. And everybody's jumping on the bandwagon saying what a wonderful woman this is. So you forgot that she thought 500,000 deaths was okay? That's what Brendan O'Neill is saying. That look. In the warped moral universe of anti-Trump hysteria, in the historically illiterate world that has been fashioned by the protesters against him, what happens is Albright seems good, and or at least better, because Trump is abnormal, and therefore the rest of them are normal. By portraying him this way, you are implicitly whitewashing everybody else. That's just a fact. If you're going to say this guy is just so abnormal, it as Brendan O'Neill says, this out-of-control hatred for Trump doubles up as an uncritical conformist apology for the rot that came before him. It redeems barbarism. And then finally, Bob, he says this: more importantly is what this denormalization drive does for other politicians. It absolves them. It flatters them. It tells them that what they have done, the destabilization of nations, the destruction of lives, was normal, at least in comparison to this. The left's arrogant, aristocratic withholding of legitimacy from Trump, by extension, legitimizes his predecessors, including those who did far worse things than Trump has even countenanced. Now, look, Trump has already started down a very bad foreign policy road. So I wrote an email about that saying, you know, meanwhile, while people are protesting other things, the real disaster of his potential disaster of his presidency is unfolding right in front of them. And they're so used to not caring what happens to foreigners, they don't even notice it. So I don't care. I don't mind criticizing the guy. Yeah. But I'm not going to say, oh, it's a unique evil in the history of America. Oh, the only way I would say that is if I was an ignorant idiot educated in the public schools. All right. What do you think, Bob?
Well, it's going to be hard for me to follow that time. You're kind of angry. Let me,
makes it fun, yeah. Right?
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think you and I came to the same conclusion. Before I lose it, so those are the more important things in terms of what's wrong with people saying, hey guys, now that they finally have come around and agree with you, maybe you shouldn't slap them on the hand. Like, you know, what kind of incentive structure is that? I understand that kind of complaint, but I think it's misguided. I don't think it's correct. And so I do want to come back to that, because that's kind of what made me really settle on, okay, this is how I'm going to handle this going forward. But you're right, Tom, in terms of the hypocrisy of this stuff and people who are guilty of the very things they're now coming forward and trying to show what good people they are. So for one thing, like David Frum recently had a cover story in The Atlantic about authoritarian regimes, meaning like, how do we stop Trump? And it was, that's interesting. You know, David Frum knows something about that, I think. We've got, you know, John McCain. You pointed this out, Tom, recently, too. John McCain lecturing us on, you know, how we got to treat people with civility and you don't want to saber rattle and you know, cause problems with our allies. And he was singing a song about bomb, 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 Iran.
Indeed.
So, it's hard for me to take this stuff seriously. And what they're doing, here's another one, is the outrage about Trump firing Sally Yates. Now, I don't know enough about that situation to know whether or not it's correct in terms of, like, was she just doing what she thought her, you know, what the thing was, whatever. So I don't know enough about the law to be able to say that. But what I do know is the people who are flipping out about Trump firing her for just standing up for human decency or whatever are the ones that when Kim Davis was refusing to do what was going to violate her conscience, they said, do your damn job. I don't know if you guys remember that, but you know, do you remember who that was, Tom? Or is that enough of a name that your listeners would know?
I'll look it up. I know who you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. It had to do with marriage licenses and she wouldn't give them, even though that's what now the law said to, you know, couples she did not think that because of her religious beliefs ought to be
Kim
allowed
Davis.
To, yeah.
Kim Davis.
Yeah. So, and again, there were like memes floating around, you know, with people who might have disagreed with certain things and then said still did their job. Right. And so that was the big thing going around for a while was Kim Davis needs to do her damn job or resign, get out of the way and put someone in there who's going to enforce the law as it's coming down from on top. And yet Sally Yates is a hero for not doing what the new rule was coming down. All right. So there is, I think, a bit of hypocrisy, and I know people can come in and quibble and say, oh, no, they're totally different because, but it's more when you agree with what the person's doing. And when that Kim Davis thing was happening, I remember thinking, wait a minute. So now the principle is if you think what the law says violates your moral principles, you want the person to just go ahead and do it anyway. You know, that are you sure that's what the lesson we're supposed to take from this is? Another thing going on here, Tom, is I think that the people who are, how can I put it? So if someone really is just rank and file people are really upset about what Trump is doing. I understand that, particularly on many issues where I would agree. I didn't like his recent executive order. You know, there are like people who already had visas in line. They're going to go start a job. And then all of a sudden you imagine you're going to the airport and then you realize, oh no, it's canceled. Just what a pain in terms of logistical nightmare.
Yeah, right. And by the way, it looks like they have subsequently walked back that part of it. But
sure
they should have had their ducks in a row on that.
Yeah. So, you know, what everyone thinks of immigration, or I mean, clearly this is just bureaucrats and government doing stuff and messing up people's private schedules and affairs. And, you know, that's just what happens. But you're right. I think that that is being hijacked by politicians. Just like, if you remember, Tom, the Tea Party movement, when it first started, that was pretty pure, I think, legitimate grassroots opposition to the bailouts and government, you know, what they thought Obama was going to come in and really expand government's footprint in healthcare. And I think that was pretty sincere and really were people who just didn't want the government bailing out big bankers and so forth. And then it got hijacked by establishment Republicans. And I get how that happens. If you're going to have a rally and then some big name from Fox News or some GOP senator is going to come in and speak, then that looks more impressive. You get a bigger turnout. But, you know, over time, that just it makes them take it over. And it's no longer this grassroots thing that actually might stand up to big government. It just gets co-opted. So I think you see that happening with the genuine people on the left, the rank and file, who really are just concerned about civil liberties and so on, that, yeah, they're getting hoodwinked by Democrat politicians coming in who don't care about civil liberties. They proved they didn't care during the Obama administration.
All right, let's pick this up in just a minute after we thank our sponsor. I don't know about you, but my whole attitude changes after I've had a good night's sleep. And I can't get a good night's sleep when I feel like I've been sleeping in Alcatraz. That's why I recommend to you the Casper mattress. It's got over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars. So it's becoming the internet's favorite mattress. It's obsessively engineered and it's offered at a price you won't believe. It's got just the right sink, just the right bounce, thanks to the supportive memory foams it has. It's very much worth trying out. In fact, you can try it out for 100 nights, risk-free, in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll come pick it up and refund you everything. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. And designed, developed, and assembled in the United States. And you can get 50 smackers off. That's $50 off a Casper mattress when you check it out at casper.com/woods and use code WOODS at checkout. All right, Bob, you were in the middle of talking and thinking, and I'm going to let you continue doing that now.
Because you had to try to, you know, raise money or something from your dirty capitalist enterprise.
Yeah, you're darn right.
So I really did think have somewhat of an epiphany, and it ties in with what you said early on in the show here, Tom, that it's certainly true. If I encounter somebody who said, wow, the stuff Trump is doing is horrible, and you know what? Obama did similar things, and I'm just sorry. I just didn't notice it. You know, my allies that I rely on, the blogs I read, Think Progress and Salon and Huffington Post, they didn't really put it in my face that Obama had a secret kill list. I had no idea. And you're right. And now I see the danger of there might be a real madman in the White House from my point of view. And so I'm really, in the future, I'm not going to just go along if some Democrat says, I have not encountered a single human being who said anything in the same zip code as that. But what I have encountered are people, and I'm not just referring to strangers. I mean, people like that I went to high school with, that I'm friends with on Facebook. I shared that New York Times thing about Obama's kill list. And I said something, I was trying to be very, I wasn't rubbing in their face. I was just saying something very conciliatory, like, hey, I don't do a lot of political posts here. And for those who aren't my friend on Facebook, that's true. In that forum, I don't try to be political. And I said, hey, you know, if you're objecting to stuff Trump's doing right now, I understand where you're coming from. But did you know Obama had a secret kill list that was established? And, you know, so if you can see why maybe some of us libertarians were trying to all along limit executive power, things like that. And people in the comments said, you're right. I am someone who has been pretty quiet up till now and I'm protesting against Trump. But you know what? And I admit Obama, you know, may have made some questionable calls, but I trust him. I trusted his intentions and his motives. And even if he made a mistake, it was because he was trying to, you know, achieve some other righteous goal. Whereas I don't trust Trump. He's just an awful person. And that's why I'm acting this way. OK, so far from them realizing they were wrong before, they doubled down. I've seen other people say, oh, man, I really miss Obama now, you know, in comparison to this monster we have in the White House. Or another way of framing it, suppose somehow there was like the evidence was uncovered of massive vote fraud, and it turned out that actually Hillary Clinton really won the Electoral College. And so somehow within the next month, things happen and Trump abdicates and the Supreme Court chimes in. And now Hillary Clinton's our president. Do you think her fans would be more skeptical of what she does in office now, or would say you can do whatever you want, Hillary, because we just endured a few weeks of that monster? And so go ahead, do whatever you want and steamroll your opposition. We don't care. I think they would do the latter. So far from this episode teaching progressives the danger of having a strong executive, I think it shows them the danger of we needed to get the vote out more this last election. I can't believe this guy slipped in. We got to make sure next time our person gets in there.
Yeah, I think that is about the conclusion that they're drawing. I would also point out something like the case of Yemen. Now, not a lot of people know what's been going on in Yemen, but that's a decision that's made by them and by the media. But reputable sources say that about every 10 minutes, a child is killed or perishes in Yemen one way or another through basically it's a campaign by the Saudis that has resulted in the country being on the verge of starvation. It is horrible what's going on there. And Obama connived at that and partook in that completely all through 2016. And I didn't hear anything about that. I basically didn't hear anything. I mean, okay, I've a very, very small handful of people. And again, if I'm trying to figure out what is the hierarchy of statist outrages, I would say starving a country to death is pretty close to the top. And temporarily closing off immigration from seven countries is not as close to the top as starving the actual people. And yet starving the actual people, not a, like nothing, like this is no big deal. I don't understand the universe you could inhabit where the starving thing doesn't even, you don't even share that, it doesn't even get a share on social media from you, but you're out in the streets screaming about the other thing. Either do both or do neither one, but don't do one and not the other. That's my thinking.
Right, and so here's where I am altering my stance. I am, because it's true, when some people, like I said, friends who know me for a while were reaching out privately and saying, like, wow, did you all of a sudden, like, are you a big, like, culture warrior now or something? You know, they really were shocked by what I was doing on Twitter. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I looked back and yes, it did seem like all I was doing was smacking down people who were criticizing Trump. And one could have understandably thought I had no problem with anything he was doing. So I am trying to come forward. Because you can hear, I think, Tom, the model is, and this shows why I'm willing to work, you know, build alliances with people who don't agree with me on everything. The person I have in mind is Glenn Greenwald, who I probably talk about him too much at this point, because he is one of the few exceptions to this rule where he was against violations of civil liberty under the George W. Bush administration. And he was consistent when Obama was doing similar or even worse things. And he was one of the few people, and a lot of his friends who loved him during the George W. Bush years, all of a sudden turned on him during the Obama years because they thought, oh, come on, look at all the good stuff Obama's doing. You really don't need to focus on that negative stuff. You know, Obama's giving us health insurance and he's going to raise taxes on the rich and he cares about the environment and, you know, let's have a balanced view. So, that's the thing that happens with all these administrations. Just like there's a lot of Republicans I know who don't like what Trump was doing with the executive orders on immigration. I mean, they might be for tightening immigration, but they don't think the way he did it was good. And they certainly think he's, you know, insensitive, if you'll permit me to use a PC word, the way he did. He just comes off like he doesn't care at all about messing up with people's lives and what have you. And they kind of say, but, you know, let's work with him on, you know, these other places where he's so good, especially compared to Hillary Clinton. You know, he's great on energy policy. And, you know, I have colleagues who are working with the Trump administration on that stuff. So, you know, in their point of view, we're going to get such good stuff here. Like, you know, that's what we're going to focus on. So I'm not saying anything's right or wrong here, but this cycle, that's how it plays out. And so when people say, you know, you can't just be a purist. And if people are opposing Trump on issues X, Y, and Z that you agree with them on, build bridges. And again, I will do it if I think they're going to be consistent. So like I give talks to the local Normal chapter when I lived in Nashville, and I'm sure the people in that room, many of them were progressive Democrats with a capital D, but that was fine. We all agreed on the issue of ending the drug war. And so I went and talked to him about the economics of drug prohibition and so forth, because I was pretty sure if you're going to Normal, you're pretty consistent on that issue. All right. But, you know, again, people who are in the same breath saying how they are upset about Trump doing things and you bring up that Obama did similar things and they don't care. Well, why would I work with somebody like that when I know they're going to support someone who's going to come in later and do the same thing? That's strategically stupid. So it's not a matter of me just catering to my, you know, entertainment. And oh, it's so fun to just point out the hypocrisy of the left while I'm ignoring these abuses of power. I think it would actually, in the long run, solidify abuses of power if I throw my lot in with people who I know are hypocrites on this, and they're going to flip the moment their person's in power.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. So there's nothing wrong with what I've seen some people doing, which is writing articles aimed at the left and saying, look, you know, if you really want to think this through, maybe you understand now that it wasn't, you know, racism and slavery that made us have our views all this time. It was that we have felt about pretty much every president ever the way you feel about this president. And so maybe now you can try and be a little bit more sympathetic. I'm watching people in the streets burning things and assaulting people. And I'm not thinking these are folks who want to sit down and say, you know, doggone it, I really need to look at the world in a different light. I see people who are quite sure they already know everything there is to know.
And also, Tom, that they're so horrified that Trump wouldn't answer the question from the guy from CNN. What a violation of free speech, while they're punching a guy in the face because they disagree with his views and then joking about it afterwards. And, you know, and then pepper spraying a girl in the face because she's standing there calmly saying, oh, yeah, I support their right to free speech and I support Milo's. And she's got a MAGA hat on. And so that's why someone comes up and pepper sprays her. So, like I said, how can you possibly be supporting that while you're then complaining about Trump cracking down on free speech? It's amazing to me. I don't understand how they can do that. But all right.
Yeah, but I think the way you understand it is to realize something that it took me a long time finally to acknowledge, that maybe you are dealing with people who simply don't have universal principles. They have particularist desires. I want what's good for my group. And for my group, free speech is good. I want what's bad for that group. And for that group, suppression and muzzles are good. I think that's genuinely what it boils down to. It's not that they're hypocrites. It's like saying, and you get this all the time in a first grade classroom, the Puritans were hypocrites because they fled England seeking religious liberty, and yet they wouldn't give religious liberty to other people. Wrong. They were not seeking religious liberty in the abstract. They were seeking it for themselves. They were seeking to practice what they believed to be the proper Christian religion. At no time did they say, and we want to be a haven for all people who have oddball ideas. They never said that. So they were not hypocrites at all. And likewise, I think in this, maybe the left are not hypocrites because they genuinely don't believe in free speech. They never said they did. I mean, well, their parents said they did. And maybe their young grandparents in the early 60s said they did. But that was a long time ago. I mean, that's like saying that Alan Greenspan is an Ayn Randian because he wrote for the newsletter in the mid-60s.
Well, I understand your point, Tom. I would just say, I think you're letting them off the hook too easily.
Oh, okay. Tom, okay, that is the one correction I will permit on this show.
Yeah, because they're not just saying, no, CNN should have the right to, you know, without a strong media, you know, journalistic integrity and the freedom of the press, how can we possibly contain abuse? They're not saying that. They're just saying, oh my gosh, Trump's cracking down on free speech. So if that's something we're supposed to go in the march in the streets for, that makes it sound like they think free speech is an important thing. So you're right that when you try to analyze deep down and explain their behavior, it is that they don't believe in abstract principles. But I'm saying they talk like they do, and at least in several contexts. And so
yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, they do talk like they do. So in that case, but on the other hand, there are plenty of leftists who don't talk that way, and they're getting their inspiration from the new left hero Herbert Marcuse, who basically said, you can't have free speech for, you know, intolerant groups. And by intolerant, of course, he meant everybody except himself. You can't allow that because they use the speech as a structural means of oppressing others. So we can't allow those people to express their thoughts. And so you do start hearing a bit of that now when we say, well, we can't allow white supremacists to speak. Look, Milo Yiannopoulos is a lot of things. He obviously is, by no non-hysterical definition, is he a white supremacist. You don't have to like the guy. But for heaven's sake, he point out to me where he has ever said there should be laws in place that privilege white people over other races. I don't see anything like that. And that is the only non-hysterical definition of white supremacy that there is. And that is the definition that every person, every thinking person accepted, that definition, all the way up until the definition suddenly got changed in 2016.
Yeah. Let me also just mention, so again, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, after further review, everything I've done is fine. I I do realize that if its work was coming off, that all I had to do was be smug and criticize progressive hypocrites, that's not too productive. And so I am trying to make sure nobody misunderstands my views, even though I don't regret any particular tweet I would have sent out or anything. But I know this, and this is true. And this is the danger of people mindlessly sharing stuff that's bogus. Like all that crazy stuff about that dossier that was compiled against Trump, and you know, and there's factual errors in it, and they're all unverified statements from anonymous Russian sources and things like that. Because of that, if I see something that looks like a legitimate news story about something horrible happening on the Trump administration, I don't just retweet it and say, "Okay, guys, let's be fair here. This is bad," because it half the time it turns out the story's wrong.
Oh yeah. So
just to give one specific example, with my son, I was talking about this stuff with my son a couple weeks ago, and he's 12, and I mentioned, and I saw a New York Times headline saying something like Trump administration poised to reopen CIA secret prisons. And I was like, whoa. And I said, okay, hey, you know what? I was talking to you about how people were overreacting, but here's something. And then I explained to him the whole history of the secret prisons under the Bush administration or whatever. And I said, so, it may come off like I'm just defending Trump against his hysterical critics, but I mean, that's really it. Oh, and it turned out, no, that wasn't true. That was a leak of a draft executive order memo out of thousands that had been prepared in the transition that somebody sent, and the New York Times ran a headline on it as if Trump was getting ready to announce the thing the next day. And, the White House denied and said, no, we're not going to do that. So maybe they floated that to see what the reaction would be and then backed off. Who knows? But the point was the New York Times headline misled me. And I know people, and please don't contact me, everybody, and say, oh, I can't believe you trust it. There's a difference between like being misleading and just saying something that's flat out false. And so that burned me so badly that at this point, no, I don't trust anything coming out of CNN or New York, no matter how bulletproof and sourced it appears to be. I don't trust those people when they say an anti-Trump thing. And so I've lost the ability to be able to stand up to abuses of power because I no longer can trust most of the sources. Like at this point, if Glenn Greenwald writes something showing something bad the Trump administration is doing, I will retweet that in good conscience because I know Glenn is really careful about not sharing something that's going to blow up in his face and he's going to have to retract 2 days later. But other than that, I've seen Reason share a story that then they had to say, oh, actually, no, it turns out this is probably the guy I was making up. Sorry, our bad. And so it's like there's lots of places that are so eager to show something awful the Trump administration is doing. They don't carefully check. And so it's the fans of doing that are going to say, oh, who cares? It's Trump after all. He's a jerk. But no, it's having the exact opposite effect. His diehard fans are going to say, yep, fake news, lying media. They're just out to get him. So that's going to embolden their support for him. And for people like me who want to be fair and balanced, I no longer have an avenue to learn anything bad about him because I don't trust these people.
Yeah, exactly. I have to just sit back and, wait 4 weeks after something happens for newspapers in other countries to maybe tell me what's happening or for independent people to figure out what's happening. But I certainly am not going to read some, for heaven's sake, I have more dignity than to read some crummy New York Times article and come to a conclusion. These people, they're Judith Miller. Judith Miller repeated every lie related to the Iraq war there was. And she's still, as far as I know, she still writes. I mean, she should be in a convent somewhere, living out the rest of her life in sackcloth and ashes. I mean, that's amazing to me. And yet people are upset about Alex Jones, who is a drop in the bucket compared to the New York Times. I just don't, and frankly, this is very therapeutic for me to get all this out. All the libertarians on Twitter who are virtue signaling to make sure everybody understands that they CNN may get something wrong once in a while, but they this is an institution of American society. These are the sort of people who want to make clear that they respect our wonderful institutions and they don't like people who are disrespectful toward them. And boy, that Alex Jones, he sure is a joker and whatever. I'm not saying I agree with Alex Jones. I mean, sometimes he's right, but I'm not saying I agree with his approach or his style or whatever. But I have some sense of proportion. What possible reason would I have to go around denouncing Alex Jones, of all people, when the entrenched institutions of American society are at war with everything decent and lie 24 hours a day. Why would I possibly do that? And yet I'm surrounded by these libertarians who want to make absolutely clear that everybody understands that they have all the correct likes and dislikes, as if the regime is interested in making distinctions like that, as if the social justice warriors are interested in making distinctions like that. If you even slightly favor the free market, you're a neo-Nazi fascist. And they're going to get to a point where they're going to feel like you can be punched in the face. And all your little protests on Twitter about how sweet and pure and wonderful you are and you're not like those other libertarians, that isn't going to matter a thing. It's not going to matter. They're not going to make that distinction. So don't even bother. All you're doing is cluttering my feed and bothering me.
Yeah, that is a good point, Tom, that you know people who have no problem calling someone a neo-Nazi when really what it means is, he doesn't believe in racial set-asides or something.
Yeah, right.
Or thinks Planned Parenthood's funding from the government should be cut. And, oh, yeah, he's neo-Nazi or whatever, hates women. People who are that careless about actually getting their opponent's position correct, they're not going to remember, oh, you know what? Yeah, you did share that CNN story about Trump. So, yeah, we're not going to go after you. We're going to go after guys like Tom Woods. That's not going to happen for sure. So let me just say, we're probably getting close to the time here, Tom, but what I am going to try to do is, like I said, number one, make it clear that I'm not just giving a blank check to everything the Trump administration does, and I certainly don't want to fall into that category, because I also think what I want to do is just to have some legitimacy, just like, I can respect somebody like Glenn Greenwald and a few other people who are being principled about it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that therefore I can be, people can realize, okay, yeah, this guy Murphy really does mean it when he believes in limited government and so forth, or, actually go further than that. But the way somebody would phrase it, that it's not merely that, oh yeah, when a Democrat's in there, it's because he hates poor people and wants to cut food stamps. But when a Republican's in there, oh yeah, sky's the limit. Go ahead and boost the military budget. Certainly want to make sure people don't ever think that that's true of me. And if I can get people in a more prolonged discussion or whatever, a reasonable civil debate, who right now are furious about Trump and the things he's doing, I think it would be good to put them on the spot, not in a hostile way, but just to say, okay, well, Obama did similar things, right? Or, you're worried about somebody cracking down against someone because of their religion. Well, under the Clinton administration, there was some religious extremists who were all burned to death with chemicals that had been banned in international warfare. It's called Waco. Go look it up. And, was that big on your radar? Were you really concerned about that at the time? Or that doesn't count because it was some weirdo, Christian cult you were told and say, who cares? That's not going to affect me. Things like that. And, get them to then explain the difference. Why is it? Or maybe hopefully they'll say, oh yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have been so, just dismissive of that, and I shouldn't have given a free pass at the time. I think that might be a way to try to, effect some change, if you will, is to get people at least to confront that and say something. But like I said, I have yet to see it work on someone. They will say, like what you said, Tom, in that video, that woman going, no, I wasn't against Obama. I liked Obama. What are you talking about? Like, she was mystified. She didn't even understand the point of the question.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
Why are you pointing out that Obama did something similar? Didn't you hear me? I like Obama. I don't like Trump. That's what was so amazing about that. Not just her hypocrisy. She didn't even get the question. She was like, what are you asking me that for?
Yeah, I think she might have now, because that was retweeted thousands and thousands of times on Twitter. So I'm pretty sure it's gotten back to her that she's now a social media celebrity. It might get through the old noggin now what the problem was.
Hey, if we can just change one mind, it's all worth it.
That's right. All right. Well, look, what was the point of this episode? Can you sum it up? What was the point? Why? What did we have this? I don't want to say rant, because I hate the word rant. People use that word for an impassioned speech they disagree with is always called a rant. So the word rant, I ban it. Okay. It is banned.
If you try to use the word rant, Tom is going to pepper spray you.
That's
just
right.
So you know.
That's right. Now, I'm not going to say it's a stream of consciousness episode because it was more structured than that. But this sort of let it all flow, say what you want to say, summarize for everybody why it was important for them to hear this.
Okay, because I think libertarians who were outraged by abuses under the Obama administration, now when they're confronted with the utter hypocrisy of progressives, they need to find a way to be productive and not just cater to their own, pleasure in mocking other people's hypocrisy. And so I think you and I needed to sift through and say, okay, what's a good strategy for going forward. So I think what we concluded was it's we're not wrong in pointing out the hypocrisy and being very wary of allying with people who we think with justification are going to flip as soon as the tables turn. And that would just be stupid. That's not, you know, us being smart and putting aside our differences and building bridges. No, if you're aligning with people who really haven't changed, right? So that's number one, that make sure if you're supposed to build a bridge with someone, they really have come around. But number two, okay, don't push such people away by being a complete jerk about it, right? That try to be approachable, and there may be people who learn from this. Look, I remember the eve of the Bush-Gore election, when that was up in the air, and I went to bed that night before it was determined, of course, and I was really worried, oh no, if Gore wins, he's going to wreck the economy, right? So in retrospect, I realized how foolish that was, let alone, you know, the invasion of Iraq stuff. And so, you know, that was a learning experience. And so I would just say, try to foster that with people that are your friends with or what have you, that take your opinion seriously, that gently just point out if you think that they're being utter hypocrites on this stuff, marching in the street for things that in the grand scheme aren't anywhere near the stuff Obama had done, and just try to get them to articulate, you know, why is that? What is your view? And maybe in so articulating it, they'll realize, oh yeah, I really can't defend that.
Well, and with that, we will say goodbye here. TomWoods.com/842. We'll probably have a few links up there related to all this. I'm going to have tomorrow, on tomorrow's episode, Angelo Codevilla. And if you for me, with that name, you know he's written some fantastic essays on all sorts of topics, and it's on the origins of political correctness. And it's not just another neocon, you know, political correctness originated in 1966 out of nowhere. It's nothing like that. He's writing at a very high level, and it's astonishing stuff. It's one of my favorite episodes of all time. So we're going to carry this conversation forward a bit, and then, because if all we talked about was this, the terrorists would win, it's back to regular topics coming up soon. But anyway, Bob, I'm really glad that we were able to catch up and do this. And you suggested this topic, and I'm really glad we did it. We didn't rehearse anything as if I needed to tell the audience that after this episode. But we just talked, and I think it came out well. Thanks for doing it.
Sure thing. Glad to be here. I always love to hear your rants. I mean, your impassioned pleas for liberty.
There you go. Thanks. All right, that's it for today, everybody. If you've been enjoying the show, then become part of the elite by joining me at supportinglisteners.com, and I will see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.